the Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Phoenix After Party Edition. We haven't been drinking, but you've still been warned.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark.
What is up, everybody? This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, After Party Edition, with your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for FlowCombat.com and MMALatestNews.com. I am here with my main man again from our very first inaugural episode, BR14, and Brian Schoonhover. What's up, buddy?
Thanks for having me again, man.
Always, man. As you know, we all watch the fights together for the most part, even on crazy days like this where... Well, let's just get into it. I wasn't able to watch a lot of the fights. I was able to watch, but I was in transit with kind of a choppy connection. I was driving back from California because I went to ACB 51 this weekend on Friday.
Yeah, you got some stories from that, man. How'd that go?
Not too much stories from the fight card if anybody was watching that, unfortunately. It was kind of a weird night for ACB, who, I waved their flag very hard. It's been my favorite organization this year as far as outside the UFC or up-and-coming organizations, however you want to group it. They put on some of my favorite fights of the year, Jan versus Magomedov at ACB 32. But this was the first UF show, so we got a lot less of those Russian and Dagestani talents that I've come to endear a lot, probably because, you know, visas and it costs money to fly. So I'm sure it's, you know, like UFC does the same thing. They draw locally. Yeah. So, but it was cool. So, I mean, we had a lot of fighters like Danny Martinez, Pat Healy. I know me and you are Bam Bam Healy fans.
Yeah, we saw him play, what, Strikeforce?
Yeah, with Maximo Blanco on the Ronda card. Yeah. Serdelio, I think, the card. Yeah. Yeah, that was, I mean, so some guys that me and you are familiar with, although Pat Healy got a tough shake. I don't want this to turn into a ACB recap too much, but there were some weird fights, some good fights as well, but it was crazy, man. This was one where I really kind of got to see, you know, behind the curtain as far as, you know, meeting some people, hanging out at the fighter hotels. And, I got to see Dom Cruz at the event, by the way. It was really, he was super genuine, nice, but I've only heard that from people. We have a lot of mutual friends and coaches.
He seems like well-spoken, very well-spoken. I mean, he's only going to be a gentleman.
Yeah. He seems super approachable by fans. And I was just going up to talk to him about our former coach that we shared, Daniil. And which was cool. We started, you know, talking about that and getting into that. And my girlfriend, Cassie, walked up and he immediately didn't even miss a beat, introduced himself, was just a gentleman, class act through and through. So it was cool to see him. But I got to see Phone Booth Fighting, a podcast that I'm a fan of. I'm a subscriber to, and you should too. And I got to see my friends Richard Hunter and Frank Mir, two other guys who I also run in the same circles with. But, you know, I finally got to, you know, sit down and meet him in person. Well, I met Richard Hunter in person before, and I've been in the same rooms as Frank Mir, but, you know, never too formal of a thing, you know.
Of course.
And yeah, so it was great to see him out there. And Brian Lacey, shout out to Brian Lacey and the One Punch podcast. He does the podcast with another fighter, me and Brian here, like Brad Pickett.
Oh, my man, yeah.
Yeah.
So, his retirement fight was announced recently, speaking of, right?
Yeah, hopefully it goes better than... other that's fighters, yeah, than it does for, you know, legends that we saw tonight, which we'll get to soon.
I'm just not even going to start there.
Yeah, it was tough. But big shout out, though, to those guys. I got to jump on, me and Lacey got to jump on the Phone Booth Fighting cast. It was a late night in the hotel lobby, but it was cool, man. I mean, it was on site. You got to see, you know, the winners and losers, kind of like that fight pass. What's that series called? The Agony of...
Thrill and Agony.
Thrill and Agony, yeah.
I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, obviously, that's a very awesome, highly produced show. But
I think it's good, especially for casual fans, to see what it's really fucking like. It's not like baseball, where you play X amount of games per season and you can lose a couple.
You know? Absolutely, you know, casual or hardcore. But this, you know, and even someone like me who's been in, you know, I mean, I've seen it before, just rough things. Like, I remember seeing, and I think Steve Lopez, when he was with Extreme Couture, and he fought Justin Buchholz in a Superior Cage Combat show that Sergio Pettis fought on as well, young Sergio Pettis, and that's where Justin Buchholz landed that front kick, Lyoto Machida, light kick, right? He landed that on Steve Lopez, and just watching a guy kind of just after that gives you a raw, I don't know why I picked that of many that I've seen, but it gives you a raw feel, and just to you know, give you a feel of the, this fighter, you know, hotel after party. The guy Jared Torgensen, who fought in the main event against Thiago Silva, got leg kicked for like 5 rounds.
Oh my God.
And everybody saw that picture. I'm sure that went viral, the big inside leg bruise. That guy was limping so badly around the hotel, and they stopped serving beer. Somehow, God bless him, Jared was able to find a beer.
Yeah,
and he sits down with his, you know, girlfriend, who was screaming very loudly. If anybody was in the event, if people, like multiple fans, were started just not recording the fight and started recording Jared's girlfriend, who was, you know, if anybody listens to the Bill Burr podcast, it was the old "Taste of You." Like, she was going nuts. And they were there, like, just chilling and, like, having some well-down, you know, family time. And hotel security comes up to them. Says, "You can't drink here." Kicks them out of the lobby.
I thought you were going to say, kicks him in the leg.
Oh, God. Might as well have. Jesus. I mean, I thought this was America.
Knows he's weak. Just.
I thought this was America, Brian.
I mean, let the man drink a fucking beer.
Yeah.
He just got his leg kicked off.
By that madman, Thiago Silva.
This isn't Jose Aldo, 145 pounds, kicking Uriah Faber. This is a dangerous 205-pound man. Well, 230-pound man, however much he cuts.
And a last note on that ACB ending on Thiago Silva. The last time I saw Thiago Silva in person... No, actually, I saw him fight Brandon Vera at UFC 125 when he rearranged Vera's nose.
Oh, yeah.
But I actually saw him after his UFC debut at UFC 84. I know I'm going all the way back to Ill Will, baby. After the weigh-ins, he went to the buffet where me and Steve Cruz, buddy of ours, mutual band member of ours.
Yeah.
We were there, and Thiago Silva is, I don't know if he's never been to a buffet line before, but you know how there's a sneeze guard, everything's at one side and the chefs are on the other. He goes behind the motherfucking thing. Like where like they're cutting like fish and stuff. It was like the seafood area, and he just starts loading fishes on his plate. Like, I don't even think he even got to the cut portions. And this, like, little, like, sushi chef, this old Chinese lady is, like, waving a knife. She's tiny. She's, like, 50, and she's screaming at him. And he's just looking at her very confused while his hands are independently operating, still loading his plate. Like, multitasking, like a killer.
Like a,
And he was like...
Stop me again.
He was, like, nodding, like, uh-huh. And he's just loading the plate, and we're like, good God, get out of this guy's way. Can't you see the man's a serial killer?
Yeah.
Actually, that wasn't his debut, but yeah, anyways, that was crazy stuff. But
that's a long time ago.
There was a different card that happened tonight. I did make it okay. Oh, wait, one more thing.
Yeah.
God damn it. I'm blaming, though. The reason why I'm blaming people, I'm not making excuses why I miss the whole story, reason for the story. I'm not making excuses why I missed the undercard, but I will blame Richard Hunter, because on his podcast, which I've heard him talk about before, they should be sponsoring him, Doomies should. But he brought up this place, Doomies, again, Brian. It's this vegan comfort food place. They serve comfort food, but vegan. And I know what you're thinking. We've all had. I've worked at a Whole Foods before. Okay, like I've had a, you know, your core selection of processed, you know, bean whatever patties they use to make these, you know, vegan burger patties, right?
Bean, yeah.
We've had it all. And what kind of sold me, though, was even a guy like Frank Mir, you know, a man's man, a real meat eater, a guy that doesn't like to say no to a good meal. And I mean that in all respect, because I'm the same way. He was sold on it. And I was like, wow, okay, there's an opinion that I really respect. And they make this, like, Big Mac, and they make this animal fries. The animal fries were better than In-N-Out's.
Really?
Because not only was it, like, a really good vegan cheese that wasn't all, like, soyed up and stuff, the vegan cheese stays at, like, a really melty temperature where, like, In-N-Out's cheese, it's, like, hard and crusty. You couldn't even tell. True. The burger, you couldn't even tell it was, like, crack. Now I'm giving them promo, but, yeah, it was really good. Yeah, damn you, Richard Hunter, for convincing my girlfriend to try Doomies. So, but it was worth it. It was actually really awesome, so I'm actually not that mad. But we made it here. Did you catch a lot of the undercard, Brian? Or...
I watched it, yeah. I watched the early prelims. I was kind of half-assed watching it. Just got home from work. I was kind of kicking back. But yeah, mm-hmm. I caught the majority of them.
Okay, well, let's start in the beginning. And we can kind of, you know, just like a drunken crime scene and we're getting interrogated. And me and Brian, we will try to pick up the pieces and recollect what we remember.
We'll make it happen. Show me the faces and the names and it will work.
You know, it's funny we say that because me and you actually didn't drink at all this, which is complete opposite of the last podcast.
Yeah, jeez.
Complete opposite. So I don't know why we're warning.
Kind of had to take a step back, but I think we took too many steps.
Yeah, we're a little late with our warning. I don't know why we're warning you on this cast, folks. It should go pretty smoothly. As we start with Smoliakov versus Asker, who looks like Steven Housen, owner, MMA Latest. Yeah, this one was, I had Asker here. I thought he was going to be more athletic and the more agile mover, that that proved to be the fact, although he did end up taking down the Russian wrestler.
I wouldn't really saw that coming, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, he did something that I really love to do. It's my favorite thing to take him out is whenever I'm in side control, I always try to go north-south because, A, it's going to get away from guard retentions. I'm moving, essentially, if I'm moving toward the head, yes, it looks more homoerotic, but I'm moving away from their legs, so that kind of cancels out guard retention, so they can get half guard, get back up, or any other type of, position retainer that you don't want to give to your opponent. And then, you know, in the same process, you can kind of get mean and really start driving your hip and your pelvis to push their face away. And in that process, they almost can kind of feel you. They'll start kind of walking with you, like, you know, Michael J. Fox doing the air guitar on the ground and Back to the Future. And they'll kind of start trying to follow you with their feet. And anticipating that follow, you can kind of change direction and go and take them out. And now it can be very risky because you can either miss the mount completely, they can catch you with a butterfly, reverse you, or maybe you get the mount, but you end up very high and fall off. That it can be very risky, even for, you know, a smaller, not so small, not as I'd like to be, but even for a smaller guy like me, risky. So to see a heavyweight from France do that, very small, very not flashy, but it was very impressive.
Yeah, and his post-fight speech was epic, too.
How genuine was that guy?
I beat all big asses.
Yeah, he beats all big big asses. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
He should come out to that, Heavy D? I Like Big Butts. He should come out to that next time.
Right.
He ingratiate himself to the American audiences, he would. All right, let's move on to the next. We had Mihailovic versus Christensen. I had Christensen here, was not just taller, longer frame, but he could use it. He had more tools on the feet, as we saw with the Muay Thai, from the clinch to the range. And on the ground, I felt he was better too, which I believe prevailed. Took him a little longer. I was starting to think that, you know, I was starting to kind of check out even on the road. Like, I was stuck in a car, and I was like,
winging, man. The Russian man. Russian, right? Am I wrong on where he's
from? I think he's Serbian. But Serbian, yeah.
He was winging those like Roy Nelson, trying to land those, and man.
Yeah,
wasn't looking good, and then at the end he just slowed down and got that mean uppercut. Ooh.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, 5'11", that was his only shot trying to, you know, Roy Nelson those things over. But DC did a really good job on that call with the uppercut, because I believe he highlighted that Christensen was looking for it before. So that's really all there is to say about that. Although it was kind of cool, there's this weird theme that people were like calling out DC, whether it was like
I saw that too.
Post, during, like not even but calling out, but talking too, to him. Yeah, it was just funny, but he hopped the cage and did that. Next fight was Chase Sherman versus Walt Harris. This one I had Harris because I thought he was just more imposing of the two athletes and more experienced of a fighter. And I think that pulled out here.
Oh, man, that combo was vicious.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Sherman's toughness got him through his tough debut with Justin Ledet, where he ate jabs for 3 rounds. Yeah. But it really bit him in the butt here, his failure to adjust and rely on that toughness. And I'm not saying he wasn't trying. I mean, he was showing
Oh, man, he was tough as hell. He ate some shots before he hit that final combo.
And he did look better than his last time out in his defense. Yeah. But it wasn't enough. Harris was on point once he started finding those cross hook combinations, and he just beautifully fed that, you know, hook right into the knee and cross. Like, it actually reminded me of Ronda Rousey versus Alexis Davis, you know, where she hits the right hand knee but she parlays her hook into more of that cuffing, Irish collar for the judo throw. So her hooks are kind of designed for a throw, granted, but it was a very similar economy of motion, right? Everything precise, pocket range. It's a beautiful job by Walt Harris.
Oh yeah, man. Impressive.
You were able to watch that one live, right? The finish, at least. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Killer.
Next one is, this one kind of has some confusion. By the way, yeah, this was a transitionary week for me because I'm moving over to Flow with my content. So I kind of warned people that there was going to be while we're kind of settling in process, that my stuff's not going to be up in Mixed Martial Analysts right away. We're still working on that. I think it's about 3 days after the news cycle. I'll have it posted on there with picks and plays. But you guys be sure to stay tuned to Flow Combat for all my future breakdowns, because that's where they're going to be dropping first. Unfortunately, as you saw, there was some typos on the breakdowns in the transfer process. This was kind of a crazy week, not making excuses. I had a lot of content in my long form, had a fighter interview, had multiple podcasts drop on my end, plus going on others. I was on the road for ACB 51, plus my debut with Flow for the breakdown. This was all in a week and a half span, so my head was every which way. So apologies for those who had to deal with me in that time period. But
it's okay.
Yeah, no, not a big deal. It really isn't a big deal, but I did state all my plays for what it's worth on this podcast. So if you're listening to this podcast, you're a winner. This did not affect you. So good on you. Good on you. But But if you did look at my breakdown, you would have noticed a couple embellishments. One, I didn't have one, or the first one, I didn't have my Jones Liebarger Ansaroff pick correct. I actually did have Ansaroff. But on my on my pick, I listed it as Jones Liebarger. That was probably just a mistake from transcription there. But in my defense, I listed it on the podcast. I just felt Ansaroff was the better athlete here. She was more well-rounded. Although Jones Liebarger shows excellent angles with her footwork and really improvement, and she could really put on a pace, and she's tough and all this. Ansaroff apparently from the word on the street is a killer on the mats at American Top Team, and she has a base when you look at her taekwondo competition. It's just like a lot of these girls, right? Like Raquel Pennington's, they'll have these deceiving records. They just need some time to put it together. I mean, you know, I think her two losses in the UFC, Ansaroff's were close decisions where she was in the fights.
Yeah.
But yeah, part of me, you know, as you know, I'm always kind of a homer for Jones Liebarger. She was at many of the Tough Enough shows that me and you attended. She was on the same one that I fought on. So I kind of always homer for her, but I couldn't pick her here. Although my breakdown, one of my breakdowns at least said I did.
Yeah. Ansaroff just looked really composed in there, man. She kept her cool. I mean, you know, Liebarger was landing that overhand right pretty consistently in the first round, and then you saw her Ansaroff take that step back and time it a few times. And then once she got the timing of that right hand, that's when the fight kind of just switched.
Yeah.
And then obviously the lower leg damage, that was what put it on her ass.
Absolutely. And I think what kind of helped that, you're absolutely right, once she got the timing on that, I think what helped her get the timing on that, or at least dissuade the timing on Jones Liebarger's right hand, was something I pointed out in my pre-fight breakdown podcast, was that Jones Liebarger tends to kind of lean forward naturally. And Ansaroff not only has a good front kick being from a taekwondo base, so she can actually throw a powerful one, although it's more of a snapping than a teep push form. The more of a snapping kick actually translates better to a fighter leaning forward like Jones Liebarger. And looking at how active Ansaroff is with that kick, I figured that would at least disrupt the offensive rhythm of Jones Liebarger, which probably played into what you were talking about, where that right hand started finding it a lot less, right?
Yeah, as the fight went on. You saw her almost taking a step back and looking at her Anderson Silva, Forrest Griffin-esque.
Mm-hmm. And no plays on any of these first four, by the way. I believe actually two of the four, if not three of the four, were on my fights to avoid. And the only reason why more is because I think I've only limited myself to three fights for the fights to avoid. There are some of these cards. Let's be honest, Brian. The whole freaking card's a fight to avoid. Yeah. So I'm not beyond reprisal of that idea.
Every card is a fight.
It's a madman sport, man. You try to figure this out, good luck. I mean, I do my best, obviously, and thank you for following along. But yeah, at the end of the day, let's not forget what we're looking at, people, okay? And we'll get to more to that point of the let's not forget point, because in our fickle sport of MMA, it is easy to forget. All right, next FS1 prelims was Tony Martin versus Alex White. Why is it blanking on his first name? Tough guy, Alex White. I liked Alex White when the line initially dropped because I wasn't sure that Martin should have been that much of a favorite. But the more I looked at it, it wasn't that Martin was just more well-rounded as far as his ground game goes. Is that Martin, even though he's not good at takedowns, he's more active and he can force kind of scrambles and do enough activity to either open those opportunities enough or at the very least earn judge's decision by, you know, cage pressure, which wasn't always rewarded tonight, as we saw.
Which is good to see.
But it did play out in this fight, though, for Tony Martin, who was immediately apologetic, you know, for the performance. But I think we've seen Tony Martin lose so drastically early in his UFC career, we have to forget that, A, he's still young, and B, those were two really good fighters, like Beneil Dariush and Rashid Magomedov.
Not people to take in lightly.
Yeah, I mean, this kid's still in his growing phase, so, you know, not the most to get excited about, but nothing to condemn him for. This was a real maturity fight, I think, for Martin, and hopefully for Alex White, too, who I hope bounces back, because he has the potential to do some things. He just has to get more active and really have that urgency in his game, you know?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is one of those fights I missed trying to get this dream going.
Yeah. Oh, and in Alex White's defense, he took this fight on 4 weeks' notice. So
4 weeks.
I don't want to harp too long on that. We'll go to the next fight. Tell me you caught the deceptive Darce from hell from Alexi Olenek on Victor Pesta.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I love God. That guy, Olenek, man. That guy, I just love his style. He looks like a villain from every movie I want to see, you know?
Yeah, I was really happy to see him go for that. that Ezekiel, even though he dropped to his back for it. And then even though I was less confident the second time around, he knew that setup. That's it. You know what it reminded me? I didn't see it initially, but on the replay, it actually reminded me of kind of like those Marcelo teams or Marcelo team variations. The more common name is the elbow, you know, those elbow over the shoulder. The grip is kind of different. Everyone does their grip differently. But when you get your elbow over the shoulder on the guillotine, where usually passing the side control is usually the fix, right? When someone grabs a guillotine, you know, on a takedown, you pass the side control and you counter it. Well, some guys, if they can get their grip, especially with the wrist flexibility, they'll get that shoulder or their elbow over their opponent's shoulder. So where not only are they not safe when they pass over to half guard, the choke actually goes in tighter and guys will tap very quick or go out because it's a blood choke, but also very painful at the same time. Man. Grapplers know what I mean when you talk about blood or pain chokes, you know, or trach chokes or cranks. There's all slightly different variations from one another. And, you know, that elbow over the shoulder, it's a done deal. You seal off both ends of the arteries, closing the blood off. And, that's all she wrote. Anyways, but that's what it reminded me of. Oh, like that was so freaking slick. And Pesta's no joke, man. I mean, he's a good grappler. Pesta's 13 fights. And I believe 11 out of 12 of the 13 fights, he was able to establish the crucifix position. Oh, yeah. That's Matt Hughes, BJ Penn beatdown position where Matt Hughes finished him. I mean, that's a hard position to achieve on a heavyweight. And for a guy like Victor Pesta, who's not the most athletic specimen, the biggest name, you know, he definitely has some grappling chops if he's able to do that. But it played right into the fire that is Alexei Oleinik, who makes his name off submission. So,
yeah. What was his 10th Ezekiel choke or something like
that? I believe 10th or 9th or I don't know.
What does that have, 62 fights? That guy's a maniac.
It's a stupid one to have. I mean, he has those long gator arms for it. God damn it. But good on him. All right, next fight. This was a popular dog that I would have put a small bid on, but I didn't get a lot of the plays in that I normally, partially because of busyness. Like I think I literally clocked all my core plays, which I do play what's listed on there, by the way. But as far as like extracurricular plays that aren't listed on the site, obviously I make those every card. I actually didn't get to make any of those, so kind of what was listed was what I played today. So I still did okay. But yeah, Mendez was a guy I was tempted on. Props on people that were on him. I know a lot of guys were on him out there. And I picked Sainz because I thought Sainz, which, you know, held to be true for parts of the fight, that his wrestling would keep it on the feet and his movement, footwork, and activity would outpoint him because Toquinho kind of plots, right? He's really good and there's a developing striking game that he showed to even develop more upon in this performance. But I didn't think it was going to be enough. Well, it was, and he was able to capitalize where he needed to, although he wasn't able, you know, to put him away early like we thought he was going to do for a second there. He kept on him, man. Oh, and man.
They were trading shots there at first, man.
I didn't see it as a split. I mean, but with the scorecards the way they went that night, it kind of makes sense that fight was a split. But
that was fight of the night, in my opinion, man. I don't see it going any other way.
I hope it
the
got
back
it.
And forth, and they rocked each other in the first round. I mean, there was a lot of action going on there. So you got to give it to Sainz as far as showing heart and wanting to win it.
Yeah, I agree with you with the fight of the night, too. By the way, I don't know if it's not been announced yet. Even if it has, we don't know because we're recording this just after the fights. But you know what we're going to have to do in the future? I was telling the listeners on the last episode, Brian, that instead of doing fight of the night, performance of the night, which is fun. I'm not hating on other podcasts and stuff or predicting those ahead of time or doing their post-show ones, but I think those are kind of boring. I want to do different ones, like, you know, like a dumpster fire of the night or something stupid like that. No, just kidding. But
dumpster match
of
the night.
Yeah, Jesus. Well, let's not go down that road. But yeah, no, I mean, like, you know, just funny things. So if you listeners, if you think of anything kind of comical that we could use as a theme to the show, I'll give you credit. Just go tweet at us. Use hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast. And just like I sent out in the tweets before this, go ahead and use that hashtag to send us any comments. These kind of shows, it's tough, you know, at least for the top five shows, you can submit your top five, which I will state in show if you do, or for the breakdown shows, you can actually ask questions like, hey, who do you got for this fight? Or I like the decision prop. What do you think about that? You know, it's a little easier for these after party shows. It's a little hard, but usually since we're kind of wild in a wild mood, you can go ahead and just talk shit and really just join the program. If you just want to, you know, add your comments, I mean, obviously if it's, you know, hate speech, we don't condone that, but if you want to have fun with us, in other words, we have a great sense of humor and we want this to be more as we get, you know, as we start gaining traction and getting more of these in the bank for you, we want this to become a thing for you. You can participate with, so feel free. All right. Going to move on from that fight. Last fight of the prelims. Wow, yeah, it's really rare you see an FS1 headliner spot with the headliner prelim spot, I should say, with debutants, where we had a Drakkar Close versus Powell. I'm skipping on his first name, but Powell's a crazy cat. He's had spurts of inactivity throughout his career. You know, he pops up in 2010 and he pops up in 2012, but he's cool. He's like a 6-foot guy who tries to fight like a flyweight, but which gets him in trouble.
Definitely.
He tried to reel it in a bit here.
Take a lot of damage.
Yes, he does. And he did take a lot of damage tonight, but surprisingly, he actually did it a lot less than he did in his past fights. That said, it still didn't work out for him as Close takes a close decision, pardon the pun, but apparently a lot of people had that one as a close one. I looked on Twitter, right?
Oh, man, really? No? People had that close? There's no way.
I don't know.
A split decision? No, that was unanimous. That was definitely unanimous.
I was in transition on this one, so I'm hoping you saw it more than me.
Yeah, Powell. Okay. Pretty sloppy, man. I mean,
I guess people was recovering from
breaking his nose in his last fight before getting to the UFC. So I'm sure, like we've had that conversation before.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference in people that just got their
nose done. Yeah, that's another factor. That's not why I picked against him, but that's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean, so he I don't know. He definitely likes to take damage, and this is not the level that you can be doing that in.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I should maybe rephrase that. People seem unimpressed with Close from what I was reading. So maybe it wasn't – I don't know what the scorecards are, so maybe the scorecards didn't reflect that.
Maybe they thought he could have finished Powell.
Yeah,
I
maybe.
I could see some arguments there. But at the same time, I mean, the guy's obviously tough. He just likes to get his ass kicked, apparently.
Yeah, again, I don't want to comment on that one too much because I didn't see it. But I liked Close going into this one just based on kind of athleticism, and he showed more of a process. That you can count on. Again, Powell's a guy that's gonna, you know, put two chambers and a 6-chamber revolver, spin it and see what comes out. And you know, those are cop killers that'll carry, you know, but they're not always gonna fire.
Yeah.
And with this approach that he likes to go through. All right, let's go to the main card. Let's just blow straight through here. Usually we have to take a break in the middle, but we're actually making good headway, and let's just knock this out, my man. Let's knock this out, my man. Let's go to the main card: Sergio Pettis versus John Moraga.
Sergio Pettis looked great.
Well, what was your? Did you have any opinions going into this fight before it happened, though?
Knowing John Moraga and kind of his decline and how he hasn't looked that great, I kind of figured that this was kind of a gimme fight for Sergio Pettis. So. It's hard to say, but yeah, I don't know. At the same time, we always say Sergio Pettis looks great. He's never looked bad in fights. He just gets caught either by a punch or submission late in the fight. So it's good to see him put it all together and get caught a couple times, but not really show that he was hurt or wobbled. So it was cool. It's a good fight.
I agree. When Sergio gets caught, he does tend to get caught hard, but his chin, you know, has been criticized. I think it held up well tonight. I mean, we saw...
Definitely. They were throwing, man.
They were throwing.
First round, they were throwing.
Moraga hit him.
They were trading.
But there was one exchange that we saw that was telling where it looked like they both hit at the same time. And not only did Sergio take it better, but Sergio landed second. Now, usually when a guy lands first, when two guys are hooking at each other or simultaneously striking, but especially when they're hooking at each other, the guy that lands first, not that they're always going to, you know, Dan Hardy, Carlos Condit, actually that one was a bad example because I think Condit technically landed second. But sometimes when you land first, you disrupt that offensive rhythm, right? This is kind of natural. This is kind of a, you know, common sense, you know, physics as you would think, but that doesn't always play out that way, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, it didn't matter. And Moraga hits hard, by the way. We forget he was nearly a punch away from finishing what many, including myself, consider the best pound-for-pound fighter currently in Demetrius Johnson. Moraga hits hard. That's one, you can criticize his inactivity, but he hits hard, and Sergio took it. And Sergio really delivering on promise. Like everybody, like from Yair, who we'll get to, I always temper hype. You know, I'm real, you know me, man. I'm real, real temperamental when it comes to that. I really don't.
Gotta wait to see what they go through.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Trials and tribulations.
I don't like to get lost in this narrative that's so easy that from fans to media, it seems like everybody just. Everybody, you know.
I eat this bullshit sandwich.
It's like, whoa, you pull your pants up, relax for a second, like wait till you get home before you start.
Here's this. Wonderful Christian man
who
found two hookers in his car when he crashes his Bentley into a light pole.
Well, you know, it's funny. Someone compared this
for another podcast.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to you know, comparisons later, because people actually were bringing up that comparison to another fighter later in this card. Rightfully so, in a lot of ways, both positive and negative. But neither here nor there. Sergio Pettis showing a lot more promise, I think, than his brother. Not as a slight on Anthony, I say that, but I say that more as a pro to Pettis, giving him props.
Yeah.
He's
still young, still early in his career, unlike...
Yeah. The way he translates his game, too, is not just that there's more, a method to his approach. It's that he translates that karate point fighting style in and out, knowing that range. That's the one benefit, right? It's knowing that range in and out. And he's parlaying that into his boxing pull and returns, or fade and returns, as DC was calling it on the broadcast there. But yeah, he does that excellently, man. Let's move to a welterweight affair, which just felt like another weird kind of veterans fight in a way. We got Court McGee versus Killabee Ben Saunders, who always reminds me of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from Game of Death for some reason.
Strangely enough, it was a pretty good matchup.
On paper, it turned out.
I mean, it wasn't the most exciting fight, but it stylistically, it matched up pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as good as Mendez and Sainz, in my opinion, but what I'm saying is that it was up there compared to a lot of these other fights as far as back, if you want to count back and forth nature, because either these fights were either one-sided and or one-sided duds, right? That for the most part, or just duds in general, right? Whereas McGee and Saunders at least had some back and forth there. They may have been quiet momentum swings, but they were momentum swings if you knew what you were looking for.
Oh, yeah.
Like from this one's, I think it's going to spark a lot of conversation, because I believe we both had this scored for McGee, right? 29-28?
Yeah, but
we're willing to die on that hit.
It was close either way. But it's, I feel like we're, like we said on the first podcast, we're at this transition now where I think the judges are kind of waking up to the fact that if someone is attacking off their back, that should count for something. And not to say that Killabee was doing much towards the end of there, but he was doing enough to where the judges thought that he didn't necessarily lose that third round. I think that's kind of what helped him out.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm completely glad that we're not just awarding mindless pressure like Diego Sanchez, Ross Pearson, or Diego Sanchez, Martin Kamen.
How many decisions has that guy
made? Yeah, exactly. But that seemed to be maybe what, on the opposite end, at least seemed to be maybe what the judges were thinking, where, okay, we're not going to reward that. So they weren't rewarding McGee, although he was arguably effective a lot of times, because whether or not he was, you know, landing some and missing some, Saunders was the one that was wearing more on his face. Saunders was the one that was getting tired. And Saunders was the one that wasn't dictating the fight.
And he didn't look like he won the fight at the end of the...
No, and he even admitted it too.
He won it, yeah.
And Saunders is this real stand-up dude, so much respect to him for that. And I wouldn't... It doesn't surprise me that he'd be so respectful, but it does tell you something when the fighter himself...
owns up to that. Yeah.
Which we'll get...
Not very impressed.
Which we'll get to in a second, too.
As well, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Anything else you had on Saunders, McGee?
I mean, like I said, it was a close one.
Yeah, I have to go with Rauch. I mean, I'm not willing to scream Rowery. They're both good dudes, but I think Saunders handled it the right way regardless.
It's good to see him back. Good to see him get a win on his way back, too.
Yeah. He apparently had some personal troubles, had to take a last-minute fight outside of the UFC a couple months back in, and got himself a win, you know, albeit a close one. So good for Ben. Hope to see both guys back with some good matchups, at least.
Definitely.
All right, next was Held vs. Lozon, man.
Our boy, Jay Lowe.
This is one of Brian's favorite fighters, by the way. So, Brian, I'll let you start off. What did you think going into this fight, and what did you walk away with after?
I thought Joe Lozon was going to do a little bit better in the grappling. I think that he was being a little greedy, you know, like we say with Dan Henderson's, how he gets these matchups with guys, and he's only doing it to be tough and to show that he's a badass. I feel like it's the same thing. He was just trying to grapple with this guy to show that he can grapple, but it wasn't the best strategy. I think on his feet, he was hurting him, not necessarily rocking him, but given the right pressure, I think he could have made it work. But yeah, Held is great, man. Watching him scramble and the way he controlled it was pretty good. We all kind of figured it was going to go that route, as we always said, but it falls into the category of it's changing, you know? Joe Lozon changing the pressure. There was a lot of back and forth there. What were the judges really looking for, and what was the defining factor? But Joe Lozon said it himself. He's respectful, win or lose. You know, he had to say he couldn't do it. He was shaking his head. He was clapping for Held, thinking he won. So it's good to see that side of Joe Lozon, but it's also good to see him get a win, even though he was, or because he was robbed at his last fight, in my opinion.
Yeah, man, absolutely. This was a funny one. I'm going to talk about the fight like Lozon loss, and I missed my pick, but
yeah.
I guess I didn't.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah, that's basically Joe Lozon's reaction summed up a lot better than when I put it. Yeah,
yeah. But no, I mean this fight.
He was like clapping. Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't win that.
Well, here's what, and I would have had no shame, you know, standing by this pick, obviously, like I ever do. But I mean, this was one where I felt really confident on the read. I felt real confident in Joe Lozon in this one. I felt that, like Joe Lozon said, he was facing himself from 6 years ago, except the difference was, it wasn't like, you know, before where he'd be selling out on a submission and then losing and gassing out like against George Sotiropoulos and in that phase of his career, right? We saw him from the Mac Danzig fight years ago till now. He's really shown a much more maturity in wins and losses.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to show through tonight, whereas hell, that's been kind of the Achilles heel of the heel hooker, is that he would sacrifice position for submission. And as a leg locker guy, as a guy who appreciates what he's doing, who could see how good he is, and I can understand why he would want to sell out for it. His overall process and the overall spectrum of MMA at the higher levels was very off. And we saw that really come to fruition. And all the warning signs and flags told me that to not pick him against Diego Sanchez. But I was just too, like I said about narrative, I say that, oh, I'm one of the last people to jump on hype or narrative, but I'm not above it. Yeah. I'm not above it like anybody else. And I was caught in the narrative that Diego Sanchez has been dropped or stopped in 9 out of his last 11. And that, you know, that stuck with me. But that was the wrong pick. And Diego held through. That said, held rewired his game completely,
yeah,
and was just top position. He usually goes for takedowns against the fence. I think he maybe went for one or two that were opportunistically there.
Yeah, he landed 5 for 6 on his feet.
Yeah, he was mainly using reactionary shots, which he showed reactionary shots before, but he barely ever uses them. He timed them well, and Joe Lozon was going forward, but regardless, it was the fact. Regardless, even if he wasn't successful, I would still be impressed with Held, because you rarely see a fighter just... these were obvious mistakes that he should have been doing a long time ago. Still yet, you rarely see a fighter just clean the slate and completely rewire his game from one fight to the next.
Yeah.
Crazy.
One fight difference.
Especially when he's facing a guy who is favored to win because he is the veteran that should be the one making the adjustments. But Joe Lozon fell prey to his old kind of self where he was selling out kind of at the wrong times. And you saw it.
Yeah, he put too much pressure on him. When he hit him with those elbows, he kind of just saw red.
As soon as he went for the armbar, man, that first exchange bummed me out because I thought he could have finished him. And it kind of lent to your point where you could see, oh, he's trying to grapple and prove a point with him. He's trying to submit him, you know. And that ended up being his downfall, because he never got close again.
Yeah, but he's great on the floor. I mean, you can't blame him. But yeah, at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, he should be on paper. You would have think he would have been the veteran making the adjustments, though, right?
True.
But yeah, great job for Held, though, and I'm sure Joe Lozon will get another fun matchup. Hopefully, the UFC will do him better than they did the man and the legend in the main event.
The prodigy,
Mike Goldberg was trying to get to a mic, I'm sure, after his third or fourth cocktail. But no, it was the prodigy tonight. It was the prodigy tonight. He even came out to the music. Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God. My last
DJ
memory of him.
Entrance is probably the only good thing.
I literally just started like wanting to cry when he came into that remixed against Frankie on that third fight. When I was in attendance, I was like, "This is all wrong. This is going to be ugly," and it was. I think he, you know, people
looked better starting off.
I think he looked better starting off. I think we can say that.
As soon as those kicks came in bunches, I think it was before he got really rocked. It was just as soon as he saw them coming in bunches, he didn't know what the hell to do.
There was one that hit
him. Nick Diaz hit him up against the cage.
Because he was up against the cage, yes, but that's about it of it. Yair didn't have the volume attack that Nick Diaz, or the same type of attack, nor did he need it. But I think the reason why BJ started backing up, because I think it was one shot early that hit him, you could tell, really kind of changed things, and was just trying to find a space in there. But again, everybody and their mother is going to, and I guess that's the point of this podcast, and I guess I'm pretty good at, you know, trying to explain, you know, what's going on in the cage, but do we really need to for this? Because really, what are we explaining? That it was a mismatch? Are we explaining something that most people, 99% of people out there, weren't already thinking was going to happen? Even me, I'm one of the biggest BJ Penn homers in the world. And I couldn't even pick him on this officially.
Man. I was always thinking worst case scenario with this, but it still was worse than I thought.
It was. Hey, even with, like you said, him looking better than we expected, not just physically, you know, emotionally, spiritually as well in the beginning. You know, doing what I thought he needed to do. But when that first takedown, and although he didn't try for it, so maybe he didn't try too hard for it. Maybe that's why he didn't get it. But I knew it was a bad sign when he abandoned that first takedown and wasn't shooting. That's what I was kind of hoping he would do. I thought he was going to, you know, my breakdown, I said if he was smart / realistic, and if, you know, he's going to do the Kenny Florian approach. He's going to faint forward, draw out the kicks and counter, Like, if you want to learn how to faint, draw out, and counter, any young fighters out there, go watch BJ Penn versus Kenny Florian. He's going to give you the tutorial on how to beat a fighter like that. And you could see it working. If this was, you know, the BJ in that aforementioned 2009 era, then I think he would have wiped the floor with Yair Rodriguez and then make him wipe his ass afterwards. Because BJ Penn would have spit on this contract if he was Yair Rodriguez being offered this fight. BJ Penn only took the best fights. He did not take these cushion fights that UFC likes to give these guys. And I think he should be respected for that. And that's why I chose to write the long form. That's why I chose to, you know, even though I picked against BJ for obvious reasons, I chose to still base my breakdown on why we need to pump the brakes on Yair and what really is going on, you know, when these two styles potentially meet, because people were completely overlooking him.
Yeah.
Not even giving him writers. I respect longtime fans, longtime workers in the sport. And it's just weird. I mean, I feel bad because I kind of break a bias, which I admit, you know, in my work written or through podcasts here, I always good about admitting when there's a bias. But you still need to stay professional and respect and acknowledge those lines. And especially if you're a journalist, and to see a lot of journalists and writers breaking that rule, but breaking it not for a domestic abusing fighter who beats his girlfriend and yells racial slurs, which we have a couple, but for a legend that helped pave the landscape.
For created this, man. I mean, the lower weight divisions are only here because of BJ, man.
What's one division that the UFC failed to create? Oh, wait, there is only one. The lightweight division, the most popular, heavily stacked division in MMA in and outside of the UFC for quite some time now. And he was the one that opened it because, you know, they failed four times. But it's so easy to be like, oh, old man Penn. Look, he's old. He's going to lose. Like, wow, that's a creative narrative. Absolutely.
BJ Penn, and it sucked to see, but man,
Well, the sky is blue as well, but I don't know if I need to tout that angle every time, and I don't know why the UFC needed to put BJ Penn out in this fight, because the reason why the sky is blue is the same reason why BJ Penn looked old, and the reason why BJ Penn looked old is because he was facing a fucking 24-year-old, quote-unquote, I hate to fucking use the word, but phenom. Yes. He's going to look old.
The thing about Yair and BJ, too, is that there were no guys like Yair when BJ fought. Call it old school, but
that was the big question about this fight. Absolutely.
No one in the day of BJ destroying lightweights. There was just no one with that style. So, yeah, you know, it is unorthodox and it is strange, but he just froze in there, man. And
No. Not only was there no one in his day, how about there's still no one of this day and age now with that kind of a style Yair Rodriguez has. Obviously, you know, technically that's true with everybody, you could say, right? But he is up in that percentile where you can really truly say that, where he stands alone. And secondly, with him being undefeated and doing as good as he is, no one's been able to figure it out. Yeah. Forget there's no example of BJ's time. There's no example of any time still. So Yair Rodriguez is something.
John Jones in that he has that style. No one really has cracked.
And I'm not, on the Yair train, I'm not obviously giving credit to the guy. I'm saying I'm not on the hype train, I should say. As far as that goes, I don't want to overhype the guy or anything by saying these things. But yeah, this dude is an outlier, man. Yeah. And
give him an 8 or 7 or 8 ranked guy and we'll see.
Yes, exactly. He still needs to show those things. I mean, he still barely struck with his left hand, okay? He still only clocks barely 10 strikes off of his left side, not including ground strikes per round. He still does not show a big presence in boxing range because of that. Also, that has to do with his in and out movement. And arguably so. I would not suggest Yair to go fight in boxing range. That would make him less good. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is a guy that has clearly showed, you know, glaring holes and stuff, we got to be careful. You know, we said it with John Jones, but someone can argue with me. Like, well, John Jones is the GOAT. Well, now he is, but early it was really hard to see him fight guys like Vladimir Matyushenko and over again when we were calling for the big fights. I mean,
fighting the janitor. I mean, his high school, right. basically.
Well, we talk about that epic run from like Shogun to Rampage. We forgot it took him a while to get to that run. The UFC certainly helped him along the way.
I rewatched that Shogun Jones recently, man.
Oh, Jesus, that was lying. And it's and John Jones, you know, if you ignore, you know, his personality, let's just say, you know, you look back on those things, they're even more amazing. By the way, when you look back on those things, definitely. You know, forget his personality and other shit.
Me give props to John Jones for is his fighting.
Me too, absolutely. Same here. Yeah, me and you are both on the. So me and you are both firmly on that boat, as the rest of the listeners, I'm sure can tell what our undertones are saying.
We should just not bring up his.
But
personality.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but we, you know, we've seen this, and I agree with it. We should have more tune-up fights. We should be taking things from boxing, whether you like this or not. This kind of approach. But what bums me out is it couldn't be any more hypocritical. Excuse me, with the kind of matches that we've got given Yair. And then you do this with a legend who, you know, maybe this was, you know, I've heard a theory on this, which it's messed up, but I could understand. Maybe after, you know, the UFC honestly did try with the Cole Miller fights and Dennis Seaver. These were appropriate fights, but maybe with the mishaps, although them not being as much as BJ's fault that people like to pretend they were, like, oh, BJ's going to pull out of a fight again. Like, you realize the fucking guy never pulled out of a fight in his entire career before, you know. That injury, and the other time was through a USADA violation, which was for a glutathione IV, which is a legitimate scientific test for concussion therapy, something we should all be encouraging fighters to do, and he was doing it with a subject group through a reputable place in Texas with Jackson Wink fighters, so let's relax on the USADA thing, people.
Yeah.
But anyway, so BJ Penn shouldn't be fighting first, but that also proves the fact that BJ Penn should be fighting if he's doing concussion stuff, but Jesus Christ.
Juiced up on some TRT in a fight and rising.
What I'm saying is I felt that they should have – sorry, I'm tangenting here, folks. I apologize. I just felt like they should have done it differently. Maybe they're trying to send a message. That's what I was saying. Maybe they're trying to send a message to BJ as in you need to stop. Or maybe
Dana White loves BJ.
You like to think, man. I mean, with Chuck Liddell –
he's not responsible for these matchups. It's not Dana White.
Who is? That's what I'm saying. Who's accountable for this
Sean
sport
Shelby.
Shit?
Maybe this was
– I like Sean. Sean, tell me it wasn't you, Sean.
Yeah.
Say it wasn't you. Anyways, but it – is brutal, man, and I don't know what's going to happen with BJ Penn. I this is where I say I don't want to see him fight again, but how many times have I said that? How many times have I said that and he keeps coming back? So what do you think, Brian?
At this point, it's been too many times, man. I said it right away, BJ, no more. I'm done. I don't want to see it. I promise you, I will not watch the next BJ Penn fight. Wow. I'm over it, man, and my heart has been broken too many times.
Me
it's
too.
This thing, it's like... Look, no matter how much he thinks he wants this at the end of the day, when he's in there, there's something, whether it's him mentally thinking it right there in that moment or if it's something else, he has this moment where he just shuts it off. There's no longer that killer, you know? We were hoping for those glimpses watching him walk in where you see the dead in the eyes, BJ coming out to fucking knock Matt Hughes out in 30 seconds. But you get those glimpses and you're hoping for that. But it never kind of breaks through.
Well, I think we got the glimpses. It's just reality at this point. I mean,
38 years old.
How great.
Took 2 years off.
It doesn't matter how great you are.
Didn't step into a gym for 2 years. Yeah. He said. Didn't. Yeah. No wonder you're going to get injured. Yes. Yeah, of course you're going to get injured not working out for 2 years.
And he's going to go in a killer place like
he was going to take a fight at 6 weeks' notice not working out for 2 years. That is BJ Penn.
That is
and
him.
And you got to respect that. Yeah. You got to love that. And I feel like a lot of these casual fans, maybe even some old school hardcores, don't really give him that love and appreciation of the fact that this dude just is a fighter.
Right.
Like you said, fighting is timeless, and it is. Kicking ass is timeless.
And yeah. And I don't know. I don't want us to beat a dead horse, but that is so true. And I don't know how any better way we can explain it. It's like you don't have to like the guy. You don't have to be a fan. You sure as shit didn't have to pick him because I didn't pick him. You didn't pick him to win this. We're not saying any of that, people. And we're not saying that you can't have your opinions and dislike and voice your opinion either, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not even saying that either. But to realize, to have, you know, no humanity in this sport, you have to have a certain level of it, okay? We all vary. We're all different. And we should all be different and embrace that. But to not have any humanity and respect to the fact that whether the reason why we even have a sport to watch as a fan or, for me, a sport to work in, is because of guys like this giving their brain cells suffering irreparable damages for that not just they have to endure, but their families, their poor freaking families have to endure and watch them go through. And some of those family relationships are, you know, there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of drama that goes along with this fight game that so many people don't realize, that even if these guys are getting paid triple, the cost is still not worth it. And everybody's chasing these money fights because it's the American dream and all this stuff. But there was a guy doing these money fights and chasing these things for no money.
For no money.
And opening doors for people to make all this money.
Yeah.
And if you want to forget that, that's fine. But just know that's what you're doing. And that's what you want from the sport. You just want to see a knockout and then move on to the next card. More power to you. I actually wish I was that way, to be honest, man. It'd be a shit ton easier.
Everyone starts that way.
Everyone starts that way. But they
suck McGregor's dick. Like, this guy is just everything. Trust me, man. It took a while for me to sit here and go, okay, McGregor's legit.
Right.
I wanted to see him tested. Even after Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier was the first where I was like, okay, this is a challenge. And then now I got to respect it.
Right? Oh, yeah. By the way, I've always respected and liked McGregor as a martial artist, like people forget.
Forget. Yes, it's this game, man. It's so fickle.
It is.
You're only as good as your last fight, and let's be honest.
It is.
When's the last fight? BJ won 137 or something?
Exactly. Right? And that's why this is the last time I'm going to plug it, and we'll kind of end cap on this. That's why I poured my heart and soul out to do this long-form article. And it was one of my first things, and there's plenty of mistakes, and there's plenty of improvements. There's things I can do to improve as I go forward. But I really like this project, Brian, because it kind of opened up to things you're going to see more from me from the future. And as humble as I want to be and as self-deprecating as hard as myself as I am, I was fucking proud of that piece, man. I will put that fucking piece against anything else that was put out about this man, because I didn't see a lot of good stuff put out at all.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's why I had a feeling was going to come out. I had a feeling that narrative from the Fickle fan was going to sadly translate to the people that I would expect better from. So I really push hard to put that out there, and I hope people read that. It's at MMALatestNews.com. I will have it archived in the new article section, where I'll be putting all my written works now at mixedmartialanalyst.com. It'll be between the podcast section, which you should already be going to if you're listening to this, and the breakdown section, which you should also already have been going to for your references and, you know, future breakdown archives. So yeah, look for that there. It really just encapsulates, and you know, it takes away what you should take away. You shouldn't have come into this wanting him to win. I mean, did I want him to win? Yes. It would have been a great bonus. But we were all realistic, right? We all kind of had even the biggest fans, there was a realist in our brain, right? And that shouldn't be what you take away from this one. I hope you all take away something different. Take away everything you should take away from Yair, because it's going to be freaking fun as hell to watch this kid progress.
Yeah, definitely.
So. But that doesn't mean you have to write off guys like BJ Penn. Appreciate them for what they were. Their time has passed. But appreciate that time. That's all.
Yeah.
Definitely. This is a fucking crazy sport. It eats its young. So I apologize if I come off emotional in this podcast or my tweets. But like I said in my tweet, man.
More emotional.
Like I said in my tweet, maybe you share this, Brian. Watching legends get fed to young lions is my least favorite part about being an MMA fan.
And you know what? I don't know if it's that we're getting older, but it's happening way sooner than it seems like it used to. There used to be these legends that would just last and last and last. And then now I feel like guys are just coming up and dropping.
Information's out there, right? So not only are we getting more in mass numbers, which is going to create more records just by pure mass numbers and more sample size mathematically. True. But then you got to incorporate the internet factor, right? The information, in fact, the information age, right?
The amount of time I spend lurking MMA. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, man. Oh, boy. Well, that was it. We went 2-4 in our props, hit two of the props, the Pettis by decision. Olenek Pesta does not go the distance, did not hit the Lozon round 3 or inside the distance, but we did hit our two parlay pieces, Lozon and Pettis. So those went nice if you paired those up and tailed mixedmartialanalyst.com's plays. That pretty much wraps it up for this one. Do you have any closing thoughts on this card, Brian?
Man, no. Next time we're going to have to bring the party to the After Party podcast, though.
We will. Yeah. It's been crazy day. I've been in trance. Yeah, I feel like I've been running around for the past 2 weeks.
It's been an early day for me too, man. It's been a long one.
Yeah. But
man, it was a good all around card. It's a bummer to see a legend drop like this. And hopefully, like I said, hopefully this is the last time we see BJ Penn.
It is. I don't know how much of an after party we really could have had now that you mentioned that in hindsight,
so
right?
True.
There probably would have been some sense of sorrow
with the tone.
But yeah, I apologize for that on my end, folks, but, But again, hey, this is raw. This is what we're here for. You know,
these people know.
Yeah, you're probably there with us. And again, I felt
whether it's BJ or whether it's Anderson Silva, whether it's any other legend that's dropped from greatness, it's the hardest part about this game.
Well,
I'm a fan of this game.
And you know, passion is a good thing sometimes too. And you know what? I'm not going to have much more chances. Hopefully I will have no more chances to get passionate about BJ Penn because I don't want to see him fight again.
We're not doing an after party podcast here, dude. Telling you that.
That's
now.
For sure. I don't know. I only want to do it in general in that case, man. Be too depressing. But no, thank you guys for listening. If you have listened to this, hopefully you were able to get some forms of entertainment and some, you know, post techniques and post opinions to help, you know, feel your own, or if not and disagree, feel free to tell me. Brian, while I look up to see if there's any last minute participation, why don't you tell the people where they can reach you on Twitter, if, you know, to get you more active.
So I never tweet.
There you go.
But that if too. You want to get me more active, you can reach me at BR14, spelled out in words, not numbers. And then throw another N on the end of that bitch. That's my email. No, that's it. It's just at that.
He'll be tagged in my tweets as usual, so go ahead and follow him and bother him there. You follow me at the MM Analyst. Look for future works. I should be having some things come out with Flow soon, some more projects that I'm not sure if I can talk about, but will be interesting, and I know you will like it. So stay tuned to flowcombat.com. And just like I did with my, you know, Andrade interview or BJ Penn long form, that I'll still be doing and contributing stuff over at MMALatestNews.com. So make sure you follow them too. And of course, all my work, including this podcast that you're listening to, will be archived at MixedMartialAnalyst.com. Please give us feedback. And if you like us, then hell, give us a favorable rating and review on iTunes. We're available there now too. That's the main place I want to be available until, you know, y'all, we get a bigger following, y'all start demanding, we pop up other places. That's what we're going to be. MixedMartialAnalyst.com and iTunes. So we'll probably have a top five show in between here and the next UFC card. But the next UFC card, I'll be previewing UFC Denver with striking coach Angelo Reyes. We'll be breaking down Cerrone versus Masvidal. I'm getting his opinion on Shevchenko versus Pena. And it's going to be good, especially a guy like Angelo Reyes, who's a Renona wild card, Freddie Roach guy.
Oh, yeah.
Also was a Kempo Coretti guy like myself back in the day. So me and Angelo kind of get along. Trains some Anna Huletan, amazing female prospect fighter, as well as, you know, worked with aforementioned Frank Mir, as well as current UFC fighters Alessandro Ricci. So we'll have him on. We will pick his brain. So be sure to participate. Use hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast. And stay tuned for our next top five episode and any other announcements where you can participate with the show. Till then, protect your neck.